This is UN and Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Matt Wells. In this week's programme, armed gangs target African migrants and refugees for their phones and boat engines as they make the perilous crossing from Libya to Italy. And we'll hear about the mother in the Central African Republic who just wants to stop crying over her violence-plagued nation. But first, South Sudan's intensifying humanitarian crisis now means that a tragic milestone has been reached, with more than 1 million children forced to flee the country. UNICEF's chief of communication in South Sudan, Tim Irwin, said it represented a generation on the brink of catastrophe. Monday's joint statement from the UN Children's Fund and the refugee agency UNHCR says an estimated 5.5 million face serious hunger and famine's already been declared in some parts of the country. Well, I spoke to Mr. Irwin on the line from Juba.
A tragic milestone that we've reached now, when nearly one in five children in South Sudan is now a refugee. Add to that, there's a further 1 million children who are displaced within South Sudan, many of them living in UN protection of civilian sites. I mean, we can only imagine what the long-term effects of this kind of trauma and upheaval and constant insecurity is going to have on these children. And I think we really are seeing that there is a generation here which is on the brink of catastrophe. Many of them have known nothing but conflict for the past three, nearly 4 years now.
And the fact that it's 62% of this 1.8 million figure, this staggering figure who've become refugees, are children. I mean, why so many children?
Because often the fathers may stay behind and the mothers will travel with their children. And, you know, one mother may be with four or five children. But I think UNHCR is saying that a very alarmingly high number of the children are arriving unaccompanied. People scatter and they run into the bush, and families are often separated. Children often lose track of their parents.
And this huge humanitarian crisis is obviously going to be a burden for everybody within South Sudan, but clearly, increasingly, for the countries around it who are hosting these families.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's nearly always the case with these sort of refugee situations, is the burden, if you like, of hosting the refugees falls, you know, not on countries further afield in Europe or more developed nations, but on countries neighboring the situation, countries who are often struggling with their own developmental or economic issues. And as we've seen in the case of Uganda, they've been exemplary in their treatment of refugees coming from South Sudan. It speaks volumes about the desperation inside the country that you have these staggeringly high numbers of children and their caregivers and families who have said the safest place for them is outside of their country, and are showing up in not just in Uganda, but Kenya, Ethiopia, and even the Democratic Republic of the Congo, which has been a refugee-producing country in the past.
More than 6,000 migrants in the space of 72 hours were rescued earlier this week from the Mediterranean Sea after leaving the North African coastline. The number's not a record, according to the International Organization for Migration, or IOM, but it is an indication that the sailing season's begun in earnest. Reports have also emerged that armed gangs are now targeting migrants on the high seas, robbing them of their mobile phones and boat engines. Daniel Johnson spoke to the IOM's Joel Millman.
Well, we're hearing about acts of violence on the high seas, in addition to the acts we've heard on the coastline, and of course a terrible tragedy of people drowning from unsafe vessels. The most astonishing thing, and we think it points to what we would call a fraying of the infrastructure that smugglers and traffickers are relying on, is acts of robbery. Once a migrant vessel, usually a rubberized dinghy, is out at sea, groups will come out and take the engine away. We heard this week of all the migrants lost their cell phones, which was kind of mysterious because they're not that valuable, and maybe it was just something that the groups did viciously.
We're talking about shipwrecks and at least two over the weekend. Can you give us more details about what happened? There's been some fine weather recently. Perhaps that's what sparked the surge.
Well, the favorable weather is a very important consideration with the Mediterranean. We know that April looked extremely busy and then fell off, so it didn't break an April record, which indicates a lot of pent-up demand to get out on the water. And sure enough, this past weekend, we understand that the total number of rescued at sea was 6,612 people. It's not an all-time record for a weekend, but it's up there in some of the bigger weekends we've seen in the last 3 years. And we believe that there were two important shipwrecks this past week, total of 190 deaths that we were pretty sure of. Other agencies have slightly higher numbers.
So let's have a look at figures compared with last year's in terms of arrivals. 10,000 more arriving in Italy compared with last year, and four times more arriving in Spain.
Yes, those routes are busier this year than they were last year. We're not certain that there's a correlation that they're busier because the eastern route from Turkey is slower. We're not sure there's correlation because we're not seeing the same ethnic mix that was coming through Turkey, coming through North Africa. So we don't think it's a diversion of traffic. But we do think that the Libyan corridor is at capacity. I mean, that has been pretty close to between 150,000 and 200,000 a year. In terms of just hard numbers, we're up to about 40,000 crossing from Libya to Italy. It's a little higher than that because we don't count someone until they've landed in Italy, but we know there's several thousand still being brought in today. So it's over 40,000. This time last year, it was barely over 30,000. So we know we're 10,000 more on that route. Spain, the numbers aren't quite as dramatic, but we are seeing the higher numbers. And that, of course, we're seeing in conjunction higher numbers of fatalities as well.
News of Monday's deadly assault on UN peacekeepers in the Central African Republic shone the spotlight once again on the proliferation of armed groups across CAR. Najat Rushdie, who's deputy head of the UN Stabilisation Mission in CAR, MINUSCA, said that half the population now needs assistance and the country is in danger of sacrificing a whole generation of children to conflict. Clashes between armed groups divided along sectarian lines plunged the country of 4.5 million into civil conflict in 2013. Ms. Rushdie, a former minister in the Moroccan government who took up her post a few weeks ago, spoke to Cristina Silveiro here at UN headquarters.
After all those years of crisis, you know, and humanitarian assistance, it's really about time for us to think about more sustainable and durable solutions, where even when addressing humanitarian assistance, we need to immediately connect it to a recovery. And I can give you a very simple example. You know, instead of doing food distribution, what we are doing actually and in Kagabandaru, for example, is to provide the population with vouchers. The population, they are going to local commerce and buy whatever they want to eat.
You've gone out to the different regions, Bawa, Kagabandaru, and you've met with the populations. What is it that struck you the most and keeps you, has given you a vision and a motivation?
I will always remember the face of this mother. Her eyes were full of tears. And she just told me, we don't want to cry anymore. It was really, really, really so heartbreaking, you know. And she was so much looking forward and so hopeful, you know, just looking at UN and looking at the international community, hoping that actually she is not going to be forgotten. And she is not an isolated case, you know. They don't want to cry anymore. They don't want to have this fear, you know, of their boys, their sons and their daughters going to armed groups just because they did not have any other option. It is really important in CAR more than anywhere else. That we address alternatives. The way we address alternatives is definitely to provide them with skills so they can maybe access new opportunities in the job market, is to provide them with some support for the entrepreneurs among them, for them to create their very small company. And they are entrepreneurs, you know. I really admire their resilience, actually. And I met with some of the youth who actually are still enrolled in armed groups. Their motivation is not an ideology, which actually is a very good news for us, because when there is an ideology behind that, it's much more difficult. Their motivation are very simple, you know, really simple. Any teenagers, you know, in his 50s, in his 15s and 16s is dreaming to become a hero, is dreaming of doing something different. And the armed groups are providing them, you know, with this way, at least in the beginning, of doing something different. So today they reach the stage where they are really tired of that. They are tired of this life.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN in Africa. You can follow more of our programmes at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. So before we go, just a word about our latest podcast from our Lid Is On series. And this time we're talking to Sylvia Earle, who's probably the most famous woman oceanographer alive, about the upcoming UN Oceans Conference at the beginning of June. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Matt Wells.